we are going to bless the lives of some kids. And that's just one more way that you can give. And that will be set up what, next Sunday, Terry? All right, there'll be a box right back there. So we'll have a spot for that. He was in the final stages of decay. We read his story from the Gospel of Luke, and we know that Luke, from what Paul tells us in Colossians 4, verse 14, was a doctor. And Luke tells us that he was full of leprosy, or covered in leprosy. And so when Luke, the doctor, says that, that's not just a poetic exaggeration. I believe it's a diagnostic observation. He does not have an inch of skin visible through his tattered clothes that is not pockmarked with scabs and oozing tumors. And the ends of his fingers and his toes are grotesque disfigurations of their former selves. Leprosy, if you ever read about it, it's a horrific disease. He first noticed it several years earlier. It was small specks on the palms of his hands. He kept them hidden at first until his wife noticed similar specks on his eyelids. And from there, it grew to cover his body, the specks eventually erupting into seeping sores that crusted over with scales. And that's only what you saw on the outside, burrowing beneath his skin. He could feel the disease eating away at the nerves throughout his body, and he could feel it until he could feel no more. He became numb to both pleasure and to pain. He couldn't feel pain anymore. For instance, he broke a toe and didn't even know it until the dead necrotic flesh tore away from his foot. Cut fingers soon became infected, and now even menial everyday tasks were fraught with danger. He may no longer be able to feel physical pain, but nothing could numb the pain in his heart. The social stigma was more crippling than the disease's physical assault. According to law, he had to keep a minimum distance of 6 feet away from anybody that passed by, and most people preferred the distance to be much greater. He is shunned. Adults, if they're coming the other way, will walk on the other side of the street and mutter underneath their breath. Little children run from him, not muting their screams at all, and the older kids shoo him with stones and sharp-edged insults. But still worse is the spiritual humiliation. You see, his fellow Jews believed that his disease was a direct blow by God on the backs of those who were hiding some sort of sin in their heart. And so everyone who saw him quickly averted their eyes, looked the other way, and assumed that his wretched skin was the sign of a wretched heart. The rules of his religious observance required that his garments be torn, his hair unkempt, his face obscured. He is dressed as a mourner going to a funeral, his own burial, it would seem. Anytime he goes anywhere, he must cry out a warning to all who come near. Unclean! Unclean! An announcement of both his physical and spiritual death. And so he lives not only with the horrors of the disease, but also with its shame and guilt. There is no cure for the man. He is forced to live outside of the walls of the city, shuffled off to a leper colony. There, on the far horizons of humanity, he is sentenced to live out his days, just a symbol of his separation from God. At the colony, food is lowered into the entrance of the cave, a cave that is crowded with the miserable and the lonely. And those who bring the food, they never dare enter. They drop the food and then they scurry away like frightened stable mice. His life is one of isolation. Though there is a good number of them there in the leper colony, they are lonely. You see, like the disease itself, the isolation progresses gradually but completely. First, it was his casual friends that dropped out of sight, and then his circle of close friends tightens, shrinking smaller and smaller until only his immediate family is left. And one by one, they too stopped coming by to see him. His wife quit coming 2 years ago, forced to find provision and protection somewhere else. And his mother is the only one who sees him at all anymore. And her visits are shorter and less frequent. And she no longer looks him in the eyes like she used to. The hollow cave he lives in is a symbol too, a symbol of his hollow heart. His life is a hard life of muted grays that grow darker with each passing day. He huddles in the cold, shadowy recesses of the cave with only the occasional faint echo of the outside world that creeps in. And there he lives, or perhaps it would be more accurate to say there he dies, without hope, without love, without the simple joys and dignities that everyone else enjoys in life, being smiled at, being greeted in the street, buying fresh fruit in the market, talking politics by the public fountain, laughing, getting ready to go to work, operating a business, haggling over prices with a shopkeeper, getting a wedding invitation, singing psalms in the synagogue, enjoying a Passover meal with his family. All of these things are barred to him forever. And he can't remember the last time that someone touched him. No one touches him. Only in his dreams does anyone ever dare shake his hand or pat him on the back or put an arm around his shoulder or hug him or stroke his hair or kiss him or wipe a tear from his cheek. He wakes early this morning from a dream of those times where people touched him and loved him, but it's just a dream. The tears are still there, and there is no one to wipe them away. It was only a dream. You see, reality is the cave and the colony. But this morning is one of those mornings that an echo from the outside world comes into the cave, and it reverberates throughout the cavern. There is noise and activity inside their little crack in the earth, and he emerges from his shadowy cleft to see what's going on. You see, the colony is abuzz with news. Everybody is saying that Jesus is in town. Jesus. Jesus, isn't he that rabbi? You know, the rabbi that's different from all of the other rabbis. The one who claims to be the Son of God, the one who heals the sick, that makes the lame to walk, that gives sight to the blind, that Jesus, isn't he the one? I wonder what he might do for a leper like me, the man thinks. And it is this news that sparks hope to this dimly burning wick. Furtively, he slips away, hoping to find this Jesus. And at first, he follows bits of overheard rumors and stories. And then he's able to follow the growing numbers of people. And finally, he can tell where Jesus is just from the crowds that press around the rabbi. And the closer he gets, the more brightly the hope burns within. And at last he arrives, but Jesus is surrounded by such a crowd of people, there is no way he can get close. The people around him are too thick for him to approach. And so timidly he shuffles his way along the frayed edge of the throng, watching and waiting and listening. And with each person that Jesus heals, a wave of wonder crashes over the crowd and foams at the leper's feet. And so, trembling with excitement, he dares do what he never would have done with any other rabbi. He dares to draw near. As he does so, The crowd finally notices him, and they part like the Red Sea. A leper is in their midst. Some of them stand silently in their scorn. Others murmur their indignation, but no one dares stand in his way. And soon the path is cleared all the way to Jesus. And he stops within arm's reach, well inside the permissible 6 feet. And there he falls before Jesus at his feet. And he looks up and he begs. His plea is halting but direct. If you are willing, you can make me clean. And Jesus looks at the glimmer of faith in the man's eyes, in his sunken eyes. He looks at the ashen skin. He sees the sores, but more than that, he sees the shame and the guilt. And without beauty and without bloom, this wilted flower of a man bows before his Creator, a reminder of how thorns have taken over the garden. And the sight fills Jesus with such compassion. And then Jesus reaches out to do the unthinkable, to touch this man. Jesus touches a leper. And he doesn't just touch the corner of his ragged robe, but he places his hand fully on his ravaged skin. But Jesus does more than touch his sickly flesh. Jesus touches his heart. Touch says so much to somebody that no one touches anymore. The touch says, I love you. I care. I'm sorry. I understand. I am willing. I will help. And with that touch, goosebumps flutter over what little pools of feeling still remain on his diseased flesh. And Jesus doesn't delay in ending the man's suffering. I am willing, he says, be clean. And a surge rushes over the leper, and this time he feels it all the way to his bones. And he looks down at his hands, and gone is the sickly color. Gone are the sores. And he tests the fingertips. There's no disfiguration there. And there is feeling. And he clenches and he makes a fist, and there is strength. And so he stretches out his foot and he sees 5 fully formed toes in the chapped leather that he calls a sandal. And Jesus says to him, don't tell anyone except for the priest when you go to offer your sacrifices. But how could he ever keep quiet about such a thing? He has to tell somebody. And he looks back to Jesus, and his eyes pool with emotion as he tries to find the right words to speak. But it feels as though his whole sad life is stuck sideways in his throat, and the words can't come through. But Jesus understands, and the man can tell just by looking that Jesus understands. Soon the words will come, and then he will tell everyone he sees. He will tell everyone about his cleansing. He will tell everyone about this wonderfully willing Savior who dares touch a leper. And the news will spread far and wide, and the crowds will come to see this Savior who reaches out and touches a hurting world. To me, some of the most powerful images from 9/11 were of the firefighters and the policemen and the first responders who were running into the buildings as everyone else was running out. I have a friend who's a police officer, and he says the part of his training is to be able to run toward danger or toward a threat when the natural instinct is to flee. I can think of only two things that would drive a person to touch open wounds and scars, and that is love and training. A parent with a child, an EMT at an accident site. A parent, you see, is driven by love. The EMT by years of training. The mom does it because she loves the child. She would do anything for the child to care and protect her. It's her nature as a mother. The EMT can do it because she has learned and she has studied and she has practiced, and she has practiced it 100 times so that now it comes to her by second nature. It was the love of Jesus that drove him toward people that everyone else did everything they could to avoid. You see, Jesus touched people where everyone else recoiled away from them. And not only would Jesus touch them, but he would touch them where they hurt most. He touched them where they were most vulnerable. The very thing that others ran from, Jesus went straight for that thing. And it wasn't just true physically, it was true emotionally and spiritually. But we can get a real good picture of how Jesus touched people spiritually and emotionally by looking at how he touched them physically. It's a portrait of how our Savior loves us at our most unlovable place. It's his very nature as the Son of God. And I'm amazed in the gospel how many times the gospel writers draw our attention to the touch of Jesus and how much Jesus' touch meant to those who sought Jesus out. Let me just give you some examples. He touched Peter's fevered mother-in-law. He touched the eyes of the blind. He touched the disciples when they fell face down in fear. He touched the ears of the deaf. He even touched the tongue of a mute. And here Jesus touches the unclean flesh of a leper. And people went to great lengths to touch Jesus, to be touched by him. People pushed through throngs of crowds just to touch him. They begged him to touch them. They brought their children to Jesus so that he could touch their children. Science has discovered the incredible healing power of touch. But I don't think we really need someone in a white lab coat working on a government grant to tell us how powerful a touch can be. All you need to do is to look at a mother with her child or two lovers in the park, and you will know just how important touch can be. But science does give us an explanation. Touch, they say, lowers blood pressure and cortisol levels, effectively reducing your stress. At the same time, according to a University of North Carolina study, touch raises oxytocin levels. Now, a powerful hormone, oxytocin is. It plays a key role in sexual intimacy. It's what bonds a mother to her child during breastfeeding. It's also what gives you that sense of belonging when you're with a group of loved ones or close friends. Touch relaxes you, helps the brain to focus. Even the simplest of touches are processed by what scientists have discovered is the reward center of the central nervous system. Students who receive encouraging pats from their teachers do better on tests. Patients who receive sympathetic touches from their doctors respond better to treatments. Athletes perform better when they are touched by coaches and teammates. And that's just the power of human touch. And we have a God who loved us enough to send his Son into the world to live as one of us and to touch us where we hurt. But we don't like to touch people where they hurt, do we? You see, we don't want to get too close to their wounds. Now, we give it noble reasons. We don't want to cause them more pain, we say. But I think if the truth be known, is the reality is that we're afraid their wounds might hurt us too. We don't want to be contaminated by their wounds. But we live in a world filled with pain. Ours is a fallen world where sin and death often have their way, a hurting world where relationships are broken and hearts are aching, dreams are shattered, homes are wrecked, and even the good gifts of God are twisted and perverted into something unrecognizable. You see, I think the only difference between the leper and us is that he wore all of his pain and hurt on the outside where you could see it. Imagine if all of the hurt and the pain that we've experienced could be seen on our skin. Think of what a disfigured bunch we would be here this morning. Who wants to get close to that? In fact, we live in a world where sometimes even the touches hurt. You see, with our hands that God gave us to show tender love, instead we batter and bruise. Instead of affection, we use and abuse. Instead of building up, we tear down and destroy. And for many people, touch is not something to be cherished or treasured, but it is something to be feared. And they become like the puppy that's been struck too many times. But something deep inside still longs for someone to touch them and to take the pain away. People will endure so much hurt in hopes that someday, someone, somewhere will touch them and take it away. But to reach out and to touch someone where they hurt, that does not come to us by nature. Sin and selfishness tell us to withdraw, to pull back. We don't want to touch people where they hurt. We don't want to get too close. We don't want to get messy. We don't want to be contaminated by their wounds. And I have enough hurts of my own, thank you very much. But then I hear the voice of Jesus whispering in my ear, "For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. And I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. And I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me." You see, our Savior calls us to touch the lives of others. There is something incredibly powerful about a love that reaches out and touches people where they hurt. A touch that's like that first breeze of a September cold front after a long, hot August. A touch that says the pain won't last, things are going to change. The touch itself offers hope and love and acceptance, and it says the wound doesn't matter, but only the love. It is the kiss of a mother as she reaches down and scoops up her crying child. And it's magical how a kiss can make the tears disappear even though the wound is still there. Or think of a loving husband reaching out for the first time to caress the breast of his wife after a mastectomy. And with just a touch, she feels beautiful again, desirable. It's the first time an adoptive parent embraces their child as their own. And with that, years of abuse and neglect begin to be wiped away by an open heart and an open home. You see, church, here is our mission: to touch a hurting world. Let that be our vision. And it doesn't come to us naturally. In fact, I think we can only do it through love and through training. We can only do it when we love people with the love that Christ loved us. And we can only do it when we have trained ourselves by walking with His Spirit. Only then can we run to those that everybody else runs away from. Only then can we love like Jesus. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. And when Jesus was here on earth, He reached out and He touched hurting people. He proclaimed good news to the poor. He bound up the brokenhearted. He released the captives from darkness. He gave sight to the blind, and He brought comfort to those who mourn. He touched people on the outside and on the inside. Now today, you and I, we are the hands of Jesus. The hands of Jesus that are to reach out and to touch a hurting world. We are God's first responders sent into a world that's collapsing under the weight of sin. We are His healing hand. We are that point of contact between the love of God and the pain of people. We are the gauze that He uses to wrap up broken hearts. And our lives need to touch people at the very place where they are most wounded. Not at their safest place, not at the place most distant from their scars. Not just a pat on the shoulder or a hand placed on the back of the hand, but at the place of their deepest hurt. You see, the place of their deepest hurt, that's where Jesus is. And that's where He's called us to be also. I want to leave you with a little story about four people named Everybody, Somebody, Anybody, and Nobody. There was an important job to be done, and everybody was sure that somebody would do it. Anybody could have done it, but nobody did it. Somebody got angry about it because it was everybody's job, and everybody thought anybody could do it, but nobody realized that everybody wouldn't do it. And so it ended up that everybody blamed somebody when nobody did what anybody could have done. You got all that? Now you can think, well, somebody should give that person some new clothes. Somebody should feed that hungry family. Somebody should spend time with that lonely person. Somebody should help them pick up the broken pieces. Somebody should do something. The question for us today is that somebody me? Is that somebody you? And maybe you're here this morning and you are hurt and you are wounded and you are in need of a Savior. And what I want to tell you this morning is this, that Jesus is still in the business of reaching out and touching hurting people. And He wants to be your Lord and your Savior. And you can receive Jesus as your Savior here this morning. Maybe you're here this morning and you already know Jesus as your Savior, but you have some hurts that you need to leave at the cross. Maybe you just want to spend some time in prayer. Because Jesus has already nailed it all to the cross. We can leave all of our baggage there. In my Sunday school class this morning, I was doing the new members class. And one of the things I told them, I said, one of our core values here at Sunrise is this: we care more about your future than we do your past. See, the only thing that about your past that matters is that Jesus died for all of your baggage on the cross. You can leave it there. So if you need to pray, we invite you to come. We invite you to come if you're looking for a church home. You say, I want to be a part of a church family that wants to reach out and to touch those who are hurting. I want to be a part of that. I want to do that. We would love to have you here at Sunrise. Would you please be standing as we sing the song of invitation?
give you my trust, Jesus. And you are my God, and you are enough, Jesus. You are my life, I give you my trust, Jesus. And you are my God, and you are enough, Jesus. Oh, Jesus. My heart is yours. My heart is yours. Take it all. Take it all. My life in your hands. My heart is yours. My heart is yours. Take it all, take it all. My life in your hands.
I lay down my life,
take up my cross, Jesus. For you are my God, whatever the cost.